I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. And today we're going to analyze the connection between France and Ireland, the French-Irish connection. I have joining me a man named Patrick Noel. That's a perfect name for exploring the French and the Irish connection. Patrick's mom's Irish and his dad's side goes all the way back to France. He's got an Irish passport. He lives in Cork and he knows France and Ireland very well. And he's going to help us with some calls looking at the French-Irish connection. Patrick, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
Now, you live in Cork right now, right?
That's right.
But you've been raised with a French and an Irish sort of culture in your family.
Yes, but both bilingually and both with both cultures, Irish as strong, both Irish and French.
Now, as Europe is growing together, Europe is dealing with mixing it up but maintaining distinct cultures. And Ireland and France are both in the EU now. You both got the same coins. Yeah, you both got the same passport.
Right.
People can study here, work there, no problem at all. What sort of affinity do the French and Irish have? Are there connections with the French and the Irish that would sort of be surprising?
Oh, well, it goes back to the Celtic times. You find Celts in the northwestern part of France, Brittany.
Brittany, right.
And also you find all the Celts obviously in Wales and in Cornwall and back in Galicia as well.
So if you took a boat from Brittany on the northwest of France, you could go over and hit Cornwall in the southwest of England. And then bounce off of that and carry on to Ireland.
And carry on to Cork.
And Cork, yeah. Where you live. And right. All of these people historically spoke a Celtic language.
Yes, absolutely. The Scottish, the Irish are of the same lingo, and the Manx, but the Manx has disappeared right now.
And the last Cornish speaker, the Cornish language died out 100 years
the
ago.
The Cornish side died out, but they were closer to the Breton and the Welsh.
Okay, so the Celts in France, or the Bretons, the Cornish and the Welsh were one arm of the Celtic languages.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
And then the Irish and the Scots were the other.
Yes.
With Manx, which is very small. All right.
From the Alemannia, that's distinct as well.
You've got the Celtic connection between Ireland and France. What's another connection?
You've loads of different connections. You've the historical connections from the Catholicism.
So you're obviously the French and the Irish are Catholic cultures.
Catholic cultures, they go back a long way. Okay, the progression of Catholicism or the repression of Catholicism and its position in each state has been completely different.
How's that?
Well, you have, for instance, in Ireland, the Catholicism has been completely repressed by the English from the time of the Reformation and even before that.
Protestant English.
Yes. Protestant English, they actually banned the practice of religion, of the Catholic religion. For a long time, the only heads of villages were priests, Catholic priests. It was like the only form of resistance of, let's say, flocking was the Catholic religion.
For the Irish to stand up against the English.
Yes, yeah.
And I think you could say the English were more interested in dominating Ireland economically than religiously. But
yeah,
it just
correct,
happened
yeah.
to be the tribes there were Catholic, whereas the English happened to be Protestant. We have Tony on the line in New Jersey who's got some thoughts on this. Hi, Tony.
Oh, hi, Rick. How are you?
Great. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, the question I had, and it's fascinating. I grew up in Montreal, Quebec. I now live in Chatham, New Jersey. I had grown up in a very French, albeit Canadian culture, but my family is very Irish. And the question I had was just, as Patrick had alluded to a moment ago, the current role of the Catholic Church in terms of shaping current French and Irish culture and just similarities and differences. And is it as pronounced as perhaps it had been in the past?
So how is the Catholic Church influencing the contemporary cultures where it has dominated them 100 years ago? What's going on today, in other words?
Exactly, and especially in this age of instant news and globalization, the Internet and information sharing, et cetera.
Well, that's interesting. Patrick lives in Cork. You've got your family in Cork. How's the, when you were a small kid compared to today for a child, for instance, what's the influence of the church?
Well, I think in Ireland, I think they're kind of two distinct. The Catholicism unites them, but their story is different and they've been influenced in different ways. They both suffer from the same ailment nowadays, Ireland and France, in terms of Catholicism. The people going to church, the numbers have really waned. On the downside,
I know that's true in France. That's also true in Ireland, eh?
Very true in Ireland. Maybe less, maybe just to a slight degree less.
But still, if the Pope comes to Ireland, a third of all the people in Ireland gathered together in the big park outside of Dublin. What park was that? Phoenix Park.
That was the Phoenix Park. Yeah, 1.2 million there. Yeah,
1.2 million people gathering for a mass. So maybe they don't go every Sunday, but they still get excited when the Pope comes to town.
Exactly.
How do you describe that?
That's exactly when things started to change from that time, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's a lovely book out called The Pope's Children by Mac Williams, talking about all this change in the Irish mentality and regard for the church.
What year was that big visit by the Pope?
1979.
Yeah. The Pope came to Dublin. So in that generation since then, there's been a big change.
Yes, the baby boom from there. That's the new generation that is actually very benefiting from the fruits of the big, you know, the boom that's been going on for the last 10 years.
What, Patrick, you live in Ireland. You've grown up in Ireland. To what do you attribute that? Are there scandals in the church that disillusioned people, or is it just a symptom of the modern age?
It's a bit of both. There's a big thing in Ireland that wasn't so present in France, but I mean, which is present in the Catholic religion. I mean, we can find it at different moments. Is guilt. The guilt has been a huge factor because there were so many rules, and the parish priest was the God Almighty.
Right.
And couldn't be questioned, that opened the door to abuse. And it has been loads of abuse. We only scratched the surface of the abuse. Today, there are cases that cannot be brought to justice because it's too much time, the people are deceased, whatever.
But that's the same when you say power corrupts. I guess even religious power corrupts then, eh?
Oh, absolutely.
Now, you found that in Ireland.
Well, I found out when I was younger, but coming to Ireland and... I just found it in the culture. There was this fear, and it has waned practically completely. Now this like a rebellion, a counter movement to, I think, plenty. The fact that there's full employment, there's abundance of everything has got a lot to do with it. Ireland's got very materialistic and is losing, in a way, a little bit of its... what makes its raison d'etre, you know, in terms of interest there. Sometimes it's slightly, you know, people say there's different views.
So Tony in New Jersey, does that make sense?
Well, I was going to say that's fascinating. The thought that popped in my mind is with the increasing materialism in Ireland and perhaps France, if that perhaps strips away a little bit of the mysticism which had powered the church through the ages.
I think you can make an interesting correlation between affluence and secularism. Scandinavia is a good example. You know, technically they're Lutheran countries. I mean, people have to pay taxes to support the Lutheran church, I believe, but almost nobody goes to church, and you can say it because it's the most self-assured and affluent corner of Europe. Ireland has suddenly become one of the hottest affluent places in Europe. Consequently, church attendance is going down. When you go to the developing world, you find church attendance is huge and religion dominates the communities, right, and the people's ways of life. I guess when you're really filthy rich, you're like a camel trying to get through the eye of the needle, huh?
Right. That's fascinating.
All right. Now, so contemporary, I think we can say Europe is becoming... Well, from a Christian point of view, a missionary field. I mean, it's sort of interesting to think that the home of St. Francis and St. Patrick and all these guys is sort of looked upon from other parts of Christendom as a place that is falling away from the church. But historically, I think it's clear France and Ireland are shaped by their Catholic heritage. Even in the EU constitution, it's famously secular. There's no real reliance on the church, but they do. The only mention of the church is that we do have a Christian heritage that shapes the cultures we have today. Patrick, how would you compare how Catholicism has shaped France as opposed to Ireland?
Well, France has been rocked in a different way through the French Revolution, where the position of the church was completely wiped away.
That's true, wasn't it? Just literally, legally abolished.
And the kingdom and all that went with it.
Churches were turned into temples of reason.
Yeah, well, they both united. And Napoleon kind of got that a little bit together just to kind of keep the peace when he came to prominence. And eventually it was actually separated in the early 1900s. The state and the church was completely separated for the good of everyone.
As it remains today.
Yeah.
Tony, thanks for your call.
Well, thank you so much, Rick. Thank you, Patrick. That was
thank you, pleasure.
Wonderful to hear the conversation.
All right. Happy travels. Amy's on the line in Lafayette, Colorado. Hi, Amy.
Hi. How are you?
Great. Thanks for your call.
Well, thank you. I'm also a fan of the show, like others, and of the travel tools that you provide.
Thank you. What are your thoughts on this French-Irish connection?
Well, I'm actually very fascinated by this Catholic connection that is really running through as a theme, because my grandma, who recently passed away, her maiden name was O'Brien, and she was Irish Catholic, and somehow ended up meeting my grandfather, who is French and German, and our last name supposedly is a French spelling of a German name, although I don't know whether that's true. It's a spelling of Schmitz with a Z instead of a DT. And they're both very, with a strong Catholic connection. And I was wondering, first of all, you know, if that makes any sense and if that's possible, that that could be a French spelling of a German name, and why, I guess, if there was any sort of a movement of people from Germany to France and to England and of course, Ireland with respect to Catholicism, and moreover, how one would trace your heritage, because I am planning on traveling to Ireland and would love to be able to find out sort of what the heritage is and what the connections are with my family.
Right. Schmidt, I've come across the name Schmidt in France, but it's written S-C-H-M-I-T-T, which is kind of slightly different. There's no really obvious connection to a French. It's a French sounding. It's probably Germans that might have come through in subsequent to the wars or were, you know, for some reason displaced.
And a lot of times you'd change your name to make it easier on your family when you're trying to assimilate into a culture that didn't like where you came from.
Right, correct. Right. And I know that's true, but it seems that S-C-H-M-I-T-Z would not necessarily be easier.
It doesn't look terribly French to me, but...
Yeah, me neither. That's why I've never truly believed my dad when he tells me that.
Well, maybe you've got to go over there and do a little research on your own there, Amy.
How does one go about that?
Well, let's take Ireland, for instance, because that's where Patrick lives. If you want to trace your roots in Ireland...
You have to go to the actual locality, the parish, because a lot of the records were burnt in the forecourts when there was the rising.
And explain that a little more.
When there was the Easter Rising and subsequently the War of Independence and the liberation of Ireland, there was fighting going on around the forecourts. And on the occasion of a fire there, it destroyed all records that, you know, from that time. So that's going back, way back in history.
So the records that do survive would be in the village church.
Exactly, the parish the area and the local priest would have access to.
All right.
Well, the local parish.
Amy, good luck on your search.
Yes, thank you very much.
Uh-huh, bye now.
Bye-bye.
Sharon is on the line in Capitola, California. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, how are you doing, Rick?
Great. Thanks for your call.
Thanks.
We're talking with Patrick Noel about a French-Irish connection. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I actually am Scottish and Irish, but my maiden name is Lacey, spelled L-A-C-Y, which half the family thinks is a connection to Hugh de Lacey in Ireland. And the other side of the family insists that it must be Gaelic. And I guess I'm kind of curious why it would matter after 150 years having immigrated that long ago. But I'm curious, you know, if there's a significant French connection since the Norman invasion.
Well, there were Huguenots came to Ireland as well. There was a famous Huguenot quarter down in Cork and French Church Street. Coming back to your name, de Lacy could be linked to from Norman heritage. There is also the name Lucy, L-U-C-Y, which is on its own, Lucy, L-U-C-Y. That's a very current family name in Cork as well, especially. So maybe you could direct your research to that, to the Cork area.
Okay.
It's an interesting point that Sharon brings up, why people would even care. And it is kind of funny, isn't it? Generations later, they're still debating, is this Norman or is this Irish?
Yeah, I just find it really interesting. I guess I'm not certain why I even care, but I have a tendency to lean toward the Gaelic connection and assume that, among other things, I have always heard that Hugh de Lacy didn't have any legitimate heirs.
Right, that's interesting. I mean, the Gaelic is always more romantic anyway. So
he had no legitimate heirs, meaning he had illegitimate heirs. Is that the idea?
I assume he probably did.
I think Hugh de Lacy probably did. All right, well, that's one thing to splice into your travel planning, Sharon, when you head over there. So good luck with that.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for your call. I'm talking with Patrick Noel, and we're exploring the connections between the French and the Irish. Now, most of the connections are because of the religion, the common religion,
correct,
Catholicism. Yeah. There's also connections because they have a common enemy.
Yes, Britain, England.
Britain.
Yeah.
All over Europe in the history, you learn my neighbor's neighbor is my friend because you have that common enemy in the middle. And historically, of course, England and France were the superpowers, and the Irish were the little thorn in England's backside. And the Irish had that. Also the Scots. I was just in Scotland, and there's a lot of Mary, Queen of Scots was basically, I guess, raised in France. And the French took her in and had great hopes for her because she was sort of the hope of a Catholic Scotland.
Revival, yeah.
To stand up against the Protestant English. So as we struggle with these different cultural connections, we're entering into a fascinating time for traveling through Europe because as Europe is uniting, the regions are able to flex their muscles and wave their flags and speak their dialects more freely because the nations are no longer threatened by the regions because the nations realize they don't matter that much anymore because Europe is becoming Europe rather than instead of Paris and London and Amsterdam and Berlin calling the shots. What do you see, Patrick, as the impact of Europe uniting on the regions in their ability to be independent culturally?
Well, my view is that, for instance, I'm against the European constitution as in terms of having a kind of a synthesized Europe and a federal Europe. I think like for the States, it works differently because it was a new country and there was a mix there, a dynamic mix, and it's proven its workability. Whereas in Europe, you can't explain globalization to the French, winemaker or, all the really ethnic stuff. The traditions go very deep in France, for instance. I take the example of France because globalization seems to fit better for England and Ireland for some reason. Like they've gone away a little bit from the land as well in those two countries. Whereas, so that's why I think there should not be a constitution, but a respect of each one's cultures. But they can still have a synergy.
But don't you think that the unification of Europe or the sentiment in Brussels with the European politicians is to celebrate and support the ethnic differences of Europe while still trying to be competitive in a global world, in a global economy?
I think they're trying to do that. They're probably a little bit heavy on the bureaucracy, and it takes a long time to get anything through.
Right. But they are champions of the regions rather than the nations.
Yeah, so I mean, I would go along with that, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. On a political view, I do think for the world peace in general, I think having Romania and Bulgaria join before Turkey ahead of Turkey and leaving Turkey out was maybe a bit of a mistake. I think Turkey should be considered too.
Well, that's the next challenge for Europe to deal with.
Yes. Exactly.
And that's another interview altogether.
Okay.
Patrick Noel, thanks so much for helping us explore the connections between France and Ireland.
It's my pleasure, Rick.
Thanks.
Rick Steves has spent a third of his adult life in Europe, researching and writing guidebooks. His now classic, Europe Through the Back Door, teaches the skills of smart travel. His Europe 101, History and Art for Travellers, and his new Travel as a Political Act books deal with a higher set of road skills. And his country and city guidebooks cover every corner of Europe. To learn more about Rick's books, visit the travel store at ricksteves.com.